Thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me, although at a distance, maybe next time. I'm going to talk about scaling. Now, I just want a short apology because this is not a very recent work, and this is because our work sort of shifted us towards a regime in phase space that are not so much mathematical. But I think the concepts are there. And what I really want to transmit and what I discuss with you today is more the concepts and the possible solution that we propose, which I hope still hold. So what is the problem of scaling? And it's actually a problem that one sees when looking at any developmental system. It can be the fly, it can be the frog. Here is an example of two frogs. You see, they look very much the same, except the size is different, but the pattern, the body pattern is basically the same. This is another example to the right. This is the wing of the fly, of the Drosophila, fruit fly. And you see again that the wings are of different size, but the pattern, the veins, look almost identical. And you can see, and this is what I mean when I say about scaling. You get something or a tissue that has some pattern. The tissue is of different size, but the pattern looks the same. Now we can see the scaling at three level. We can see it during growth. If you look at something at some tissues as they grow, it looks like a balloon, that the pattern looks the same except that everything grows together. You can also see it when you compare related species. And what's most interesting for us is when you see it within the same species, just, you know, random variation in size or perturbation that leads to difference in size, and yet the pattern somehow is capable of scaling and adjusting to the difference in size. And now why is this a problem or potential problem, or why is it more difficult to explain? And I think it's most difficult to explain within the prevailing paradigm of how patterning is achieved, at least in very many situations. And this is the paradigm of the transmission or the translation of cell position into cell fate. And I wouldn't say it's the most prevailing model, but one of the prevailing models, which was found in many cases, is the paradigm of morphogen gradient. And the concept here is very simple. The idea is that we have given some tissue, some field of cells. We have some initial clue. It could be set by the mother, or it could be set by previous patterning process that initiates the production of this special molecule at one side of the field. We can think about this as a field of cells, one dimension. And here we have a source. This is a source that generates molecule that can be secreted out of the cells, diffuse, and degrade and generate this gradient. So once we have the gradient, the problem is sort of solved because all that is left for the cells is to interpret this gradient. This is extracellular molecules. They impinge on the cells. They are read by the receptors. And the cells interpret this in a threshold-dependent manner so that all the cells that are subject to a very high level of this secreted molecule morphogen will adapt one cell fate. All the ones that are subject to intermediate levels will adapt a second cell fate, and all the ones that are left will adapt a third cell fate, and so forth. Now, if we take this as a paradigm of how cell fate is achieved or how patterning is induced within a uniform field of cells, then scaling is indeed a problem. Because if we now take the tissue and we maintain or retain the location where these morphogen molecules are produced, and we now cut the tissue to half, then we lose all of those cell fates, just because there is nothing which basically tell us how to change the gradient. To get scaling, if this is our initial gradient, then we need to make this gradient number one into gradient this to number three. But if you just think about it from a pure single molecule diffusing and subject to some boundary condition, then of course we are more likely to get gradient number two, which is basically going to mean that we're going to lose all of this extra sulfate. This was pointed by Jonathan Cook from a paper that I found really seminal from 1981. So why was Jonathan Cook, interested in this, and why did he show this? So he was looking at actually a system that is a central example for scaling. And this is the toad of the Xenopus, the frog. And what was shown there through groundbreaking work by Hans Spemann is that we can get scaling, very accurate scaling, when we introduce a very severe perturbation. So here is one experiment, for example, that Hans Spemann did. And what he did was he took the embryo, very early embryo. If you follow this progression of the differentiation here, he took the very young embryo. He took a very thin hair, and he basically cleaved it into two. And what he saw when he did this cleavage, very precise cleavage in the right along the right plane, is that one of the halves basically became nothing, as one would maybe expect, no pattern, no anything. But the other half actually continued to differentiate and made this very beautiful and patterned tadpole. Now, this one looked to you almost complete, and in fact, it's complete. It doesn't miss all of this extra tissue that it was supposed to be missing. So it looks like some correction mechanism was it function. Here's another example that he did. The idea was that here in this dorsal tip, we have something which guides the patterning. This is why this one, the one on the right, completely lose patterning and this one retained. So we took this one from one side of the embryo and implanted it into the other part, the ventral side of another embryo. This is sort of, this is a cut experiment. This is a paste experiment. And again, what was seen was a generation of the Siam twins, if you want, which is two perfectly patterned embryo, which are fused inside. And what Jonathan Cook did in this 1981 experiment is he took the same experimental paradigm and he quantified it. So what he did was he generated very many embryos that are cut, or actually didn't cut them, but he sucked out cells. So he generated small embryo in a very refined way by sucking out cells. And then he came back after some time and he counted all of the cells that were assigned to the different tissues and asked how many cells actually, if you want, survive and proliferate, and what tissues are they assigned to. And what he saw is that he got smaller embryo, as he expected. Proliferation, extra proliferation, did not compensate from this early perturbation. But in terms of the pattern, they adjusted precisely. So the same proportion of cells were assigned to the same tissues. And the same thing he saw in this paste experiment where he generated this double embryo. So his conclusion from this experiment was that it cannot be, from a theoretical point of view, it cannot be that this pattern or this early dorsal ventral pattern is coming from morphogen. Because as we just discussed, the morphogen just in his sort of naive interpretation or naive implementation of one diffusible molecule generated from one side of the field cannot account for scaling. It cannot account for scaling when we cut the embryo, when we generated small embryo, and it cannot account for scaling when we generate this double embryo or this fused double embryo by generating a source on the other side. So that was his conclusion, but you know, life goes on and experiments go on. And as time went on, it became clear that actually this patterning system that I described to you is generated by a morphogen gradient. And in fact, very beautiful and extensive work identified this gradient. It's a molecule which is called the BMP. There are several representatives of it. And this molecule generates an activity gradient across the embryo, and the underlying cells or the cells subject to this gradient interpret this BMP activation gradient and basically become those different cell fates. Okay, so we have here basically a problem or a question. On one hand, we have this BMP gradient or activation gradient, and this is the one that is responsible for the generation of cell fates. On the other hand, we have scaling. So how those two things come together? How can morphogen gradient account for scaling and still account for the patterning and scale with the size of the embryo under perturbation conditions? So we tried to address this question, and the way that we did it was, again, looking at how the gradient is generated. And I will not take you into all of the details. Again, it's published quite some time ago, and it's not the essence here. But the approach that we take is we look at the system or try to simplify the system that generates a gradient. And of course, the simplified system of just a single morphogen secreted from one source is never what's happening. There's always feedbacks of inhibitors that are secreted as well and activated by the morphogen. And there are always this network of feedbacks that is coming up. And the morphogen or the pattern of the morphogen, we can think about as an emergent property of this molecular network that is basically a reaction diffusion system. So if you think, for example, about this particular system, we can, if we are allowing ourselves some simplification, we can reduce it to about six components, which are molecules that are either inside the cells or secreted outside. They are allowed to diffuse, they allow to interact with each other, and we have a coupled system of reaction diffusion equation. Now, of course, we can put this on the computer, we can solve it mathematically, under some simplifying assumption, and ask what would be the pattern of this morphogen BMP activation. So it's a simple exercise, but you know, the problem is that we have six components that interact, six molecules, and we have very many parameters that describe this dynamical system. So it's like this elephant that, or whatever, or when I can put different parameters, I can get basically many, many things that I want. So just knowing what the component and the basic interaction still doesn't tell me what this system is actually doing. So the approach that we have taken was to try, first of all, to look at it analytically to see when we can solve it using simplifying assumption, but also to do simulations over very, very many different possible parameters and to see whether we can get scaling. What do I mean scaling? If we take one parameter for one set of parameters, we can solve the system. Namely, we can see what is the activation gradient as a function of position. This is a solution, if you want, the steady state solution of the partial differential, a set of partial differential equation. And now we can cut the field into two, run the same system and ask, do we get, again, scaled solution? Now I'm showing you here one solution that actually worked, okay? This is now two solutions, one with the, what we simulate as full embryo, one with half embryo, and you can see that actually they scale. This represents a very small subset of the possible parameters. So if we just, you know, run a random parameter, we'll never get it. This represents a very small fraction of parameter, a very defined subset or subspace of the parameter space. So once we have it, we can also ask for what is the patterning mechanism, and we can actually simplify the equation and find a nice presentation, a nice explanation, which I can share with you. because all those equations that I described under the conditions when scaling is generated, they can basically be described as a sum of two spatial patterns. You see, we have this, if you want, a weighting parameter delta, which can go between 0 and 1, and it's a sum of two, a weighted sum of two spatial gradients that goes like parallel, 1 over x to the power of 2. Now, why does it give us scaling? It gives us scaling because delta is not a free parameter, but it's a parameter that is self-defined by the system. It's a relative abundance of two ligands, ADMP and BMP, and delta is self-defined by the dynamic of the system. And let me show you what we basically get. So we have those two limiting profiles that the system can move between. One is defined when only ADMP is there, delta equal 1. One is defined when only BMP is there, delta is 0. And depending on the delta, we can be anywhere in this region. Now, what is happening is that we have here, we have here a system for basically moving us between those two limits. And if we think about this ADMP as an expander, we have something that basically the signaling represses this ADMP. Remember, ADMP is the one which is wider, but the signaling represses it. So ADMP can only accumulate at regions of low signal, and it leads to the expansion of the gradient. So it looks something like this. If we start with a signaling that is still too narrow, we're going to make ADMP at the edge of the field. And now, because we made ADMP, the gradient is going to change. It's going to expand. ADMP is going to be produced at a smaller region, and so on and so forth until we stop the production. So this is sort of the mechanism that leads to scaling in a self-organized manner. And we did some experiments, and we gave some evidence suggesting that this is indeed what's happening inside the envelope. Okay, we can put the mathematical formulation, and it's not so important, except that it led us to think about the following. Okay, so we have this very complicated system, very interesting system, and we found some mechanism which seems a little bit, I would say, maybe too specific. It works very nicely. It seems to be consistent with experiments, but it looks something very specific. Now, the question is if we can generalize it, or can we find some, if we can take from this sort of the essence of this mechanism and maybe find a general means through which scaling can be obtained. So we looked at it again, and we realized that we can take this solution and summarize it by sort of very simple properties, because we get some morphogen, which has a profile that is not exponential, but is in fact something that decays as power law. We can get it through other means. I will not get into how we get it. And this power law has some prefactor, lambda, but lambda now is not a free parameter, but is a function of this extra parameter ADMP, which is self-defined by the dynamics of the system and depends on the size of the system, right? Because remember, we allow ADMP is repressed by the morphogen, so it can only be produced at positions where the morphogen doesn't get to, and that's why we get this feedback dynamics. So when we look at it this way, it's a sort of again, going back, and we see that it's actually something that we realize it through a bit of a complicated network of interaction, but in fact, we can get it in a much more general and easier way. If we just think of a system that has two components. It has a component of this morphogen, this molecule that is secreted and generates the underlying pattern. This is what is read by the cells. It generates a gradient and is read by the downstream, by the cells in the field. And we have an expander. Expander is something that acts on the morphogen and increases its spread. Now, In our case, it increased it in some complicated way by generating additional gradient, but we don't need this because it can work in other way. For example, it can increase a spread by promoting diffusion, or it can increase a spread by inhibiting degradation. There are many ways of doing it. So if you can think about those two molecules, and now the only thing we need to add is that the molecule inhibit the expression of the expander, and under a very broad set of parameters, this simple circuit motif, if you want, will give us scaling as an inherent feature of it. So what we need to assume about this extra molecule of the expander is that, like I said, it's repressed, its expression is repressed by the morphogen, it expands the gradient either directly or indirectly, and it's diffusible and stable. This sort of give us, if you want, a receipt to try and go and look for additional expander or additional systems that maybe function this way. And the system that we noted and we paid attention to was this system that I showed you before. It's a patterning of the wing of the fruit fly. This is the wing of the adult fly, but this is actually being patterned earlier during the larva stage. There is a wing disc, which then becomes the two-dimension, if you want, tissue that was patterning, give rise to this nice system. And there was a very beautiful paper that actually defined the new component in the system. This system, again, is patterned by a BMP molecule, a diffusible gradient BMP, DPP, which is the same class of this BMP. And this was known for a long time, but then there was a very beautiful paper that described a secreted feedback regulator called Pentagon, which seemed to be exactly what we were looking for, a secreted molecule repressed by DPP and expands a gradient. So we said, oh, maybe we have our expander. And we did some experiments which supports that this is actually the case. Okay, we're not going to the experiments. So, but there are some evidence that this is in fact working on the same way. So I guess what I want to leave you with is that scaling is there. You can see it in many systems. It's actually given the high variability that is inherent to any biological system, I would claim that it must be there. There must be some internal mechanism that know how to buffer change variation in size. This is on one side. On the other side, morphogen gradients are also there. It's also clear. So this challenge of linking those two together, having a morphogen system that is capable of scaling is a great challenge, or it's something that really constrained, I would argue, the possible mechanism for generating morphogen gradients. What we proposed in one solution is one solution for this, and this is through this small and maybe general motif, feedback motif, that where scaling is actually an inherent property. There could be other solutions. We looked at some of those. They seem to us a little bit more dependent on parameters, so we like this one. But in any case, I think the take home message that this is something that one needs to look at and understand fundamentally how this need actually affects the possible mechanism that evolved in evolution. And this is a work of Danny. Danny was a PhD with me. He now has an independent position at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And it's all through a very, very close and long-term collaboration with Benny Shiloh, who is in our department working on Drosophila, and also with Avram Feinsohn from the Hebrew University, who is working on Xenopus. And again, thank you very much for having me in this exciting meeting.